Well, good evening, everyone. This is Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And if you're listening to us live right now, hey, click the follow button. I'd really appreciate it. Let my boss know I'm doing my job. Thanks. Tonight, one of my most favorite authors of all time is with me. M.L. Buckman has written well over 40 novels and swears that he has like a triple list of short stories that keeps reading on its own. So I can't wait to hear about that. His military romantic suspense books have been named by Barnes & Noble and NPR as the top five of the year. He's been nominated for the Reviewer's Choice Award, Top Romantic Suspense. He's been nominated and shortlisted for RT Book Reviews, Book List, Top 10 of the Year. You name it, he's got it behind. He's got the most fabulous stories. And the best thing of all is his theme is powerful women and the men they deserve. I love that so much. Welcome to Authors on the Air, M.L. Buckman. Hi, Matt. How are you today?
Oh, doing fine. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. I've been reading your books for so long, and I feel like, you know, we're best friends, by the way. Because I just love your books.
That works for me.
I love the fact that you write these really kick-ass women and who are in places where in reality they probably wouldn't be, but they're kind of a take-no-prisoners lot, and I like that a lot. I love them very much. You have a bunch of different series we're going to talk about, but first let's find out about you. You've written well over 40 novels now, and not just in military romantic suspense, correct?
Right. I've got about 35 in romantic suspense. I have another 10 contemporary romance. And then I have a couple thrillers, a couple fantasies, a science fiction, because I can't help myself.
Well, did the writing bug bite you? And not too long ago. This has not been a long-term career for you, has it? This has been one of many interesting projects that you've done in your life. Can you please tell us, what did you initially graduate from college with the intention of doing?
Well, I graduated with no intention of using my degree, which was in geophysics. And the problem was that the oil crash happened of the early 80s. We saw it coming, and suddenly in 1980, graduating with a degree in geology was about the most useless thing there was. And I was so sick of the subject. So I put my life in my car, tossed a coin, literally, and drove across the country to a place I'd never been, which was Seattle. And then I freaked and panicked. But I had about 5 years of odd, funky jobs, rebuilt a 50-foot sailboat, was a theater electrician and sound man for about 3 or 4 years, and then landed a job in a law firm as a paralegal because I wasn't afraid of computers. And this was 1985, when that was a rare thing. And worked my way through corporate America in 7 different industries over the next 25 years, as a project manager specializing in disasters. So department recovery.
Creating or cleaning up? Creating or cleaning up?
Yeah. Okay, you got me. I call them once-in-their-lifetime projects because we would do this huge project, and then they would be done for a while. They'd be lying back and breathing, and I'd be going, where's the next project? Where's the next project? Because I'm a masochist, right? You know, I'm a writer.
Right, right.
And somewhere in there, I had a fantastic burnout. I mean, absolutely flamed out. Lost the business, the career, the interest in the career, the house that I'd spent 7 years remodeling. And so I sold everything that was left, and I got on a bicycle and went around the world because that made sense.
Really?
Everything was so messed up that's what made sense at that point. And I just waved at my friends and said, see ya. Yeah.
And you went around the world. How fascinating.
And
how
I went
long
around
have
the
you
world.
Gone?
I set out for 4 years, ended up being gone for 18 months. I rode 11,000 miles through almost all of it alone. And I went through Japan, across the Australian outback, Indonesia, India, flew up to Israel, went through Eastern Europe and across to France. And the real gift of a crazy trip like that is time. And it was a chance to, I call it my midlife crisis on wheels. And it was my chance to just reassess all those choices I'd made and all those weird avenues I'd gone down. The other thing that happened on the trip was I'd never written fiction in my life. And I started writing this little vignette that turned into this really strange piece of fiction that turned into my first novel, which turned into my first novel sale. So 22, 23 years ago, I started writing Cookbook from Hell, and it was published in 97.
Wait a minute. I don't recall you saying you had this desire to write in all these things that you were doing. But yet when you were on your bike trip, you decided to write. Why do you think that is?
Well, part of what got me on the bike trip was I read a lot of bike travel books and people who had done those kind of journeys. And I thought, well, I'll write one of those myself about my journey. So I had the idea of writing in my head. But where the fiction came from, I really don't know. And what happened was when I got that first complete non sequitur, I went, oh, well, that's fun. And to this day, that's sort of my mandate is follow the fun. And that's what I do when I write all my books. Yeah, is I try
How cool
to,
is that?
Will so, this be fun?
Which is your first published book, Matt?
Cookbook from Hell. It is a odd little fantasy. I actually redrafted it. Well, it's the devil's having a midlife crisis because she's sick to death of cleaning up after God for 14 billion years. Because he's kind of this crazy artist who never can quite finish anything, and she's the practical one. But before she can settle into a proper state of self-pity, a Buddhist hungry ghost comes along and steals the software that runs the universe. So it kind of all goes to hell from there. And this became a series.
Literally.
Which is my Deities Anonymous series. Book three is coming soon. I've redrafted book one. So it's now at least readable because the first one was, oh my God, it was such a first novel. But it sold. And so I was going along writing. And then what happened was I wrote this funny little thriller about these people who fly secret helicopters and started sending it around. And I got 30 or 40 or 50 rejections, just like you normally do. And then I sent it to Sourcebooks, who the editor called me on page two and said, I want this series. Tell me about it. And I told her about it. She said, well, that's a thriller, and I sell romances. And I said, okay. And there was kind of stunned silence. And so we talked for about an hour and a half, and I said, yeah, I can do that. And I threw out 40,000 words and redrafted it as a romance and sent it back. And she went, this is pretty close. And so we talked some more, and I did it again, and she bought the series. They published 13 romantic suspense books for me, and I've written another 25 that are in those series or related series. And
now
that became my career.
Let's tell everyone what those series are, though. Let's explain what those series are, because you have a lot of book series. So I found Deities Anonymous. I had to go way back in Amazon and look for that. And I found Dead Chef, which looks hysterical. I'm going to have to go ahead and read those. So let's start off with, what is Angelo's Hearth?
Okay. Angelo's Hearth is, after I got out of college, I moved across the country on a whim, landed in Seattle, and spent years working in and around Pike Place Market. And so Angelo's Hearth is a 5-book series plus 3 short stories, because I can't help myself, set in and around Pike Place Market. and Angela's Hearth is an Italian restaurant. And it's and the whole thing actually started because my wife gave me a calendar of 12 lighthouses around Puget Sound. And I said, what a great series of dates. Let's go. And so once a month, we went out to one of these lighthouses on this calendar. And by the second one, we had the idea for Angela's Hearth. And that's the first book, is this two people with the same calendar going to each lighthouse. And
how fabulous.
Yeah. And that turned into a five-book contemporary romance.
Except that there just are a few more books than that. There's the full novels, and then there are other books that go along
with
it.
There are three that are short stories.
Because you can't help yourself.
Right.
And because you can't help yourself, right?
Right. Kind of the theme of my life.
I love that. I love that. Okay, so I want to talk about Delta Force because I love this series of books like nothing else. Let's talk about Delta Force.
Okay. To explain Delta Force, I actually have to back up a little and talk about Night Stalkers first.
Oh, well, let's go to Night Stalkers because they're my absolute favorite. I love them. Let's talk about Night Stalkers then.
Where I got the idea for that is I knew I was looking for an idea. I didn't know what it was. I was just looking for something that had the ooh factor that I hadn't run into. And like Suzanne Brockman finding the seals and turning that into the majestic body of work she's done. And so I was going along and I was writing one of my thrillers and I needed somebody to be saved by a really cool helicopter. So I went out and I did some research and found my really cool helicopter. But while I was at it, I also discovered the Night Stalkers, which are the U.S. Army's Special Operation Forces Aviation Regiment. They're the people who flew into bin Laden's compound. They're the people who, if it was ugly, they were there, even if nobody knew they were there. And I thought, oh, you know, could I have qualified for these guys? So I looked it up and started reading their application. There's no way. I didn't stand a chance. These people are amazing. But
up
at the top it said, no women may apply. And I went,
and you thought,
there was my idea. And
it
was like, I've known so many amazing, strong women. It was like, you're kidding me. Women, there it is. And I had to write about the first woman who was so good they couldn't keep her out, which was Emily Beale.
And I love her.
Yep. And so she was born from that one line on that one application. And that became my theme. So when she retired from the Night Stalkers because she became a mother and didn't want to have her life at such risk and risk leaving a child alone, I moved her into my firefighters. But I was looking for another one of those on the edge kind of women. And as I wrote the Night Stalkers, I had been using Delta Force operators with Michael Gibson, who eventually got his story in by Break of Day. But it was like, but I kept talking about the men of Delta Force. And I said, who's the first woman? And that launched the Delta Force series.
Carla, right?
Yeah, that's Carla. And the funny thing is, the Night Stalkers.
Such a great story.
The Night Stalkers now allow women. But that only happened a year or two ago. And I started writing this 6 years ago. So, I was ahead of the curve. And of course, they'll let women into Delta. But one of the weird things is they've been using women in Delta since way back. Because when you're doing one person, two person infiltrations, it's a lot less obvious if you're a couple. And so it's been going on. And I said, okay, let me take the first one through the front door, the first one to actually go in and qualify at their level. And that's why that first story spent so much time in what it takes to become a Delta. because these are the best warriors on the planet. They are the best counterterrorism right. unit there is. And even the SAS, well, which they're based on, now says, no, no, it's Delta. These guys are unreal.
Well, I have to tell you, sold me on it. I don't remember where I started, but I believe I started with Carla's story and then was so taken by that, I had to go and buy the whole series. No, I mean, not just your Delta. I had to go get the Night Stalkers, and then I had to get the Firehawks, too, because I love the Mount Hood series. It's so good. The Firehawks are great, and there's so many good stories. Here's what I liked. I didn't know anything about you when I was reading these books, but I thought how wonderful it was to see strong, intelligent women who were front and center and really weren't out there looking, you know, for a boyfriend or a husband or anything else. They were doing their jobs and doing them so damn well that they put a lot of their counterpart, their male counterparts to shame, not intentionally, but they just did because they were so good. And I thought, oh, this person must really have a great relationship with women, whoever wrote this. And so, of course, then I found out who you were and was even doubly impressed because you have such a huge array of books, but none of them are, there are no wimpy women in them. And I have to tell you how much that joy that gives me to be able to say that. I understand a damsel in distress, but I sure do like it when a guy's in distress and a woman has to rescue them too. So, do you have sisters? Was your mother particularly great? I mean, how did this happen that you became this enlightened romantic suspense writer?
Well, I'm in awe of women. Actually, I'm in terror of most women. I was single a lot. I was single a lot because women are these amazing, interesting creatures who think very differently than men. And but I actually come from a matriarchy, and my mom was not. She was a bit of a throwback, but my grandmother and my great grandmother were incredibly powerful women, and my sister is a very strong woman. And the women I was meeting in theater and in science and in all these different walks of my life were just really strong, interesting women. And I'm a guy. I want to, you know, a chance to write about women was like, I talk to other male writers and I don't get why they don't do that. Because I can shut down any conversation, even with a male writer, when I say, yes, I write romance. And they all look at me like, really? And I get these weird dead silences. And it's like, no, you just write about women and relationship, and that's where they lose them. That's where I lose them. And
my nephew said that he took ballet in school because he wanted to be with the women. He said, I'm not stupid. I get to put my hands around women's waist and throw them all over the stage and dance with them. I'm not crazy. I'm the only guy in the ballet class. You know, he said, I know what I'm doing.
I took ballet too.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing is, I so love the way you write your couples, because while I'm not adverse to reading a really sexy, saucy story, the fact of the matter is there's a lot to be said when you look back at the old black and white films and your mind takes you to where you want it to, rather than having seeing it laid out in front of you. And your stories are exceptionally romantic, but not because there's this hearts and flowers type stuff, but because they feel so real to me. They feel honest and real, and
Thank you.
What women I know would say if they were in a relationship. So I have to say thank you, really. I think that's why I mean, I'm in NetGalley a lot. I told you I was in NetGalley a lot while you were still with Sourcebooks, and I'd be queuing in your name all the time to see if you had a new book out, so I could go ahead and grab the book to read it. But Let's talk about that, because that's something different too. You've been with Sourcebooks for a long time. They are a very good publisher, but it's time to control the sales on your own ship, correct?
Yes. I had 7 or 8 books published before. I had 2 books from a very small press in the Northwest that went out of business. And then I had 7 or 8 books that I had indie published in the early days of the when you could do that, after the Kindle revolution. Started in 2010. And then I sold to Sourcebooks for a 2012 release. And I'm a fairly prolific writer, so they started me at 2 a year and then took me to 3 a year and then took me to 4 a year. So, and in the background, what happened was I got to the point where I could see that I could make my living as a full-time writer. I couldn't do it yet, but I could see it. And then I got laid off in the middle of the recession, and they were not hiring mid-level project managers. And so what I did was I said, what if we just, my mentor actually suggested it, what if we just take 3 years and throw everything I've got at it? And so what I did was I started taking the 3 books a year I was sending to Sourcebooks, and I started putting 1 or 2 novels in between each one. Because if my career was going to depend on it, I worked 70 hours a week. Well, I'd done that for 30 years as a project manager anyway. So that's how I got so many novels in such a short time frame, is I just sat and wrote. Butt in chair is the secret. But
yes, I agree with you on that. I know some others who are as prolific as you and use the same philosophy. Now, I don't know how long it takes the average person to read a book, but let's say it's a week, okay? If you don't have new product coming out all the time, they're going to go someplace else and look. So if you've got stories in you, and they're quality stories, which I assure you, in my humble opinion, they are, why not put them out there for people to read? You want to keep your name out there. It, from a business standpoint, if you're looking at a business model and your product is books, it only makes sense to have new products all the time. And so as much as you can do that, it's terrific. And I don't
I
want to
put
of
a
your books have suffered. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And that's the caveat I want to put on it, is
it's
got to be quality. And
absolutely.
So when I'm actually in my writing mode, I shut the door on all the rest of that noise. And I'm just writing. I'm just telling story. And frankly, if the story doesn't work, I'll throw it. I threw out 40,000 words of a novel a few months ago. I got 40,000 words in and the thing stalled and choked. And I went, okay, didn't work. I'm going to have to start that one over from scratch. And I threw it away. You have to be willing to do that.
It's smart of you to throw that away and not have whatever bad was in there kind of pollute the next set of thoughts that are coming up your way to write.
Right.
Makes sense.
Right. And
do you have
ahead.
Ideas all the time about stories, Matt?
Well, the biggest problem with writing so much is writing generates ideas. So I'm writing right now. I'm writing the next big Firehawk book, which will be out at end of year. And assuming it doesn't choke on me, but it's looking pretty good so far. I'm always very cautious about saying what's coming because I'd want it to actually work before I get there. But while I'm doing it, I'm going, well, you know, that little character over to the side is kind of cool. But
kind
they aren't big enough.
Right?
Yeah. Or are they big enough for their own novel? Or are they going to be a short story? Or am I going to forget about them because I'm going to end up having to cut them and drop them on the editing floor? And so there's
it's
always
interesting
that
to me
process
how you
going
combined,
on.
You have combined all of your of this romantic suspense, the military romantic suspense. You have done a lot, so much crossover in there that it's fascinating to me. And it's so enjoyable. I have to tell you that when you bring back characters, when an author brings back characters for me in a continuing series or loans them to another series that's like or similar, I enjoy that a lot. It makes it a richer story for me, and the world building is more complete that way. You've created this world for your characters, and now they're inhabiting the whole world, whether they're in Delta or if they're Night Stalkers or if they're helping out at Mount Hood, you know, the Firehawk people or anything else. I like that a lot. It's not a usual thing, I don't think. Yes, there are series characters, but I like how you cross them over in your book.
Well, that came out of reading other people's series and going, oh, you know, one of the things I like are those ongoing views.
Yes.
And, you know, the more I read of more series of, oh, yeah, I like that little crossover. Well, what can I do with that crossover? And actually, I do multiple layers of them. Because from one Night Stalker book to the next Night Stalker book, you're following how every character is doing, how they're moving, how their life is evolving. But then I'll cross series and I'll bring over just one so you can peek at them, or they'll bump into each other. But even my really separated series, they're still there. They're just, it's another level of small. Like in, oh, what's the name of it? It's the third Firehawk book, which I think is Full Blaze.
They're your books, you gotta know.
But Vern is sitting on the beach and in Vashon Island, sitting by a lighthouse, and a sailboat goes by. Well, that sailboat is Angela's Hearth sailboat, and you hear the laughter, and it's a very distinct boat, and that's all it is. It's one line. But for me, as an author, that's checking in with them. It's like, oh, they're all having a good time, and they're out on that unique sailboat going out to another lighthouse.
I love that.
But that's over in my contemporary romance series.
Right. But that, you see, that to me keeps it interesting, because find an author I like, such as yourself, I want to read all the different stories. And while I may have a favorite genre over another, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to read the other books. I just happen to think you're an outstanding author. And I've very much enjoyed all the books that you've written. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Every single one of them. Yeah. And I have to just say, in full disclosure right here, MLB Buckman has asked me last week to join his review team, and I have agreed to do that. So I'm just letting you know that the interview became before the book thing did. So I don't want you to think bad of me. I'm not pushing Matt here just for any reason. I love his books. I'm happy to turn over my Kindle notes to anybody. But
and part of that was back to the whole going indie thing, was I, as of August 2nd, with the release of Heartstrike, I am now 100% indie. And so I had to step back and reassess my business model and go, what are the pieces that Sourcebooks was taking care of for me that I now need to take care of for me? And one of those was making sure my books get out for review. And so I actually approached a number of people, and you were kind enough to say yes, to build up that review.
But I understand that there are some things that they will do for you, and Sourcebooks is really a very good publisher. I want to say a lot of my favorite authors are with that title, with that publishing house. But yes, then you have to switch hats, and you have to take your scribe's hat off, and then you have to put your businessman's hat on and remember that your business depends on people reading the books and doing reviews and so on and so forth. So, it's a shift. But it sounds like this is not going to be difficult for you. You seem like a guy who takes on so many interesting challenges and has succeeded so much that I suspect that you'll be just as popular, if not more so.
I hope so. I'm betting a lot on it, because I recently was able to retire my wife from her job, and she's now my full-time assistant.
Lovely.
So,
oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Maybe she tells everyone you're her full-time writer. How about that? Maybe she doesn't want to be your assistant. Maybe she says, I have him writing for me. He's working. So, you never know.
Yeah.
Us women think differently, you know?
Yeah, I've noticed that.
That's right. So we're almost finished with our time, but I do want to ask you a few more things. Sometimes at the end of my, when I chat with someone, I do something called Final Five. It's five quick questions and five quick answers. Are you game to play? Okay. I guess I should tell you it's also called Stump the Office. So here we go. Because, that's how us girls roll. are you a pantser or a plotter or a little of both?
I am completely a pantser now. I've tried plotting. I've tried whiteboarding. I've done outlines. I've done index cards. Now I don't know what's going on more than the next scene and sometimes the next line. Truly.
Do you remember all your characters, though? Do you remember all your characters so that you can mix them up in the different books and bring them back and forth?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're constantly in my head. And I can sit there and I'll even be writing, and a character will crop up and step in. I'll go, hold it. I haven't seen you in, oh my goodness. And
right.
Like the In Heartstrike, the Delta Force book, the heroine of that book actually came out of a short story I wrote a year and a half earlier called Heart of the Storm, which is Michael Gibson's origin story, how he meets Mark Henderson. And he does it by rescuing this woman in the background of the story. And she's not really a part of the story. She's just someone for him to rescue. That rescue changed her life. And she came around on me and said, yeah, I'm Delta now. And she's like, hold it, what? And there she was.
I love that. It's a really cool thing. I know that you are exceptionally busy writing all the time, that you are very prolific with that, and that you are now running your own publishing empire. Congratulations. But do you ever take time to read yourself for enjoyment?
I always have a couple books going.
Whose are you reading right now?
What I'm reading now is Neal Stephenson, The Diamond Age, I think it is, which is a odd science fiction fantasy. Also, a lot of my reading is research. So I'm currently also reading Sean Naylor's Relentless Strike, which is about the Special Operations Forces. I am also reading Firebomber from Hell, which is about air attack on forest fires. So I have a couple, and I have a fan who's pushing me really hard to write a military war dog series. So every now and then I'm reading a military war dog book. Oddly enough, the one thing I don't end up reading is romantic suspense, because I don't
want some other author's
voice in my head.
I hear that. I hear that a lot. Interesting.
Which is a pity. I like the genre.
I'm sure you do. What book have you read more than once just for pleasure that you will go back and read, you're sure, many more times?
Oh, my gosh. There's a whole list of them. I'm a big rereader. I love to reread. When I'm really fried, I'll go back and reread. It will be The Dragon Singer Trilogy by Anne McCaffrey. It will be Nora Roberts' The Born In series. I love that trilogy. And the Chesapeake Bay series that she did. A lot of science fiction. I started in science fiction. That's actually, for a decade, I read nothing but science fiction. And it took me a long time to break that. And so I have a whole stack of old science fiction that I'll just go and pull at random and reread.
I like science fiction too very much. We have a show in this network with a best-selling military science fiction author, H. Paul Hansinger, and he's had some really good ones on there, Ben Bova, James Gunn, all these really great, these legends in science fiction. And he is quite the author himself too, so I understand. that interesting to me. You write fantasy and science fiction. You write thriller. You write romantic suspense, military romance, however you want to say. You were not into horror at all.
Before you mentioned that my motto is strong women and the men they deserve. I have a second motto which sits above my computer and is my guidance, and it's champion the human spirit. If it doesn't champion the human spirit, I'm not interested.
Good for you.
I don't read horror.
I'm a wuss, that's why. I'm scared to death of everything. Vincent Price black and white film scared me.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm a wuss. But I understand what you're saying.
I was raised on, I love Stephen King, but he's the most magnificent writer working right now.
He is.
But I only read him because he's such a good writer.
Right, right. Have you always been a reader, Matt?
Third grade. I had my magical teacher in third grade, and she took me from Winnie the Pooh to Melville in 1 year. And I never looked back.
Good for you, and good for her. God bless her.
I have thanked her many times.
I'm so glad. My next question to you is, let me think. What kind of music do you like?
Sorry, what was the question?
What kind of music do you like?
Oh, I worked for Seattle Opera for 6 years as a computer nerd. And so on Sundays, I listen to opera. I have music in the background while I write. I was raised on...
Do you have music or music with lyrics?
I have any kind of music. Because as soon as I'm in my writer's space, I tune it out. What I kind of tell people is... It keeps my editor brain busy so that my writer brain can write. I was raised on folk and Broadway, and then my sister brought rock into the house. So I love all of that. And then my kid has been great. She found out that I wrote to music, and she listened to my music list, and she went, oh, my God. And she now feeds me people that she thinks I'll like. And so I have quite a substantial list that I play in the background. That's, she said, not the most current because you're not up for it. But Casey Tunstall and Pentatonix and B.O.B. and Maroon 5, and those are all on my playlist as well.
Oh, good. Oh, cool. Cool. When you look back at when you first started writing to now, what have you learned about yourself?
Oh, wow. It's more what I've learned in feedback from others. It's twofold. Okay, what I've learned from others is that I'm a very intense person. I did not know that. I'm very focused. I work very hard, and I absolutely love doing it. The other thing that I learned from other people was that I'm creative. I was pretty convinced that I wasn't. Mind you, I did these huge projects out that sometimes built systems out of the blue, but I was very convinced I wasn't creative. And I'm finally accepting 50 novels down the road, I better accept that I'm creative. But one of the biggest things I learned was actually just a few weeks ago is that I'm not an imposter. There's this feeling that I'm faking it and somebody's going to discover me and somebody's going to find me out. And I went down to Romance Writers of America has a national conference, which is 2,000 men and 2,000 women and 7 men there to talk about the business of writing. And people were coming up to me as true fans and telling me about how my books had touched them and how much they love them and how this character meant so much to them. And it was like, I'm actually doing something real. It's not that I'm making it up in my corner and I happen to be making a living at it because I don't know why. It's people are connecting to my stories in addition to me. I mean, I'm writing them for me
Isn't
and my wife.
Isn't the best thing to be doing?
It's amazing.
Having so much fun doing what you're doing and you can make a living doing it.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. I can't, it almost tears me apart to have to tell people I have to go to work now because I want to say I got to go to play. I get to talk to writers, to creative people every single day, something that I most definitely am not. Of all the 17 shows in this network, I am the only one who's not an author. I'm a reader. I'm a huge reader, probably more than everybody else put together. But the fact of the matter is, I get to go and talk to authors. You guys are my celebrities. I don't own a TV and I don't go to film. So you who write these beautiful books that take me into all these different worlds that I never imagined ever going, you know, I go on a fantastic journey every day from authors like you. So thank you. You are not a poser for sure. So here's a bonus question. Your kids and I have decided to get together, and we're going to write a book about your life. What are we going to call it?
Well, I've actually come up with different things over the years to try to answer that one.
Okay.
Midlife Crisis on Wheels is actually my midlife crisis, but it's also a big span around that, and I am going to write that book someday. I've taken three stabs at it and haven't found that voice yet, but I'm looking, I'm close. By three stabs, I mean, I wrote 100,000 words three times and threw it out each time. That's back to my quality thing. It's got to be that clear, honest
voice
I'm looking for.
Sure.
And for my early years, I'm an IBM brat. Which my dad worked for IBM, which stands for I've been moved.
And right.
So
everybody I know says the same thing, right?
Yep. So the
great
that
vacations,
one is,
great traveling, right?
Yep. So the first book would be I've Been Moved: The Adventures of an Itinerant Childhood. And then there's the Midlife Crisis on Wheels, and as far as the overall title. A little nuts, but having fun.
There you go. It works for me. Best-selling author M.L. Buckman, who writes the most fabulous romance, whether it's contemporary, whether it's military, or whether it's romantic suspense, please go to his website at mlbuckman.com. He's got loads and loads of wonderful things for you to look at. You can also go to his Amazon page and find out more about him. And there are books coming out soon. So, congratulations on clipping the cord to your publisher and going out on your own. It's a huge step, but an important one, and I honor you for your commitment to do that. And thank you for being a guest on this show, Matt. It has been a joy to speak to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It really has been fun.
It has been my pleasure, really, an honor, since I adore your book so much. Thank you so much. Promise you'll come back again.
Sure. Just give it
to
me.
All right. There you go. Thanks a lot, Matt. Have a good evening. Good night.
You too. Good night.
And that's our show for tonight, everyone. Thank you so much. Go get an M.L. Buckman book. I love them. I swear they're terrific. Next Monday, I'm with Max Allen Collins. Man is brilliant. Can't wait to talk to him. Have a great weekend. Read a good book. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.